and welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kate Hallowell.
I'm Kai McMullen, filling in for Liz Kelly.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we're checking in with relationship news, the legendary Hollywood movie Summer Catch 20 years later. And we want to find out who the heck celebrity number six is.
I have no context for that, and I can't wait to find out. We're going to hit that at the end of the show. But before we get into the top of the show, let's take a quick break.
Psst. Hey, I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh.
Can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams, too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, it's Bill Simmons. I wanted to tell you about a new podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. It's going to be on the Ringer Reality Podcast. What's it called, Johnny Bananas?
Death, Taxes, and Bananas. We're going to be breaking down this season of the challenge, Hall of Fame episodes, and I'm going to be taking you behind the curtain of America's fifth major sport.
Are we getting special guests?
We're going to have special guests. We're going to have special effects. The show is just going to be special.
I can't wait. Check it out. Death, Taxes, and Bananas on the Ringer Podcast Network.
All right, we are checking in with relationship news. We had to switch this up at the last minute because there was an influx of celebrity relationships at the end of this week.
First up, late breaking news this week.
Yes. Amelia, the big news of the day, hit us.
Okay, so it started out I don't go on to TikTok just because I know I would get lost.
We'll get you one of these days.
Yeah.
One of these days, I'm sure. And I mean, sometimes I do check in, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm already spending inordinate amounts of time on Instagram and Twitter that I would lose another, you know, 5 hours to TikTok.
But you would. I have.
You really would.
Right? It's very scary. And I heard their algorithm is even more intense. So it's like they keep feeding me these videos. Yeah, exactly. So I actually saw this on... Well, actually, I think Liz maybe sent it around. And then I saw it on Twitter. So I'm not even going to acknowledge who did it first because there were so many TikToks being like, I know that Kylie Jenner is pregnant and here's why. And these people have sent over like these videos being like, okay, here's what she posted. And she posted like a picture of her in a green dress and she has these light pink nails. But then they take these images from Kim Kardashian's Instagram stories where she has tagged everyone and they're holding their little drinks. And you can tell with the drink that she's tagged as Kylie that Kylie actually has green tipped nails. So the picture she posted on her birthday saying, it's my birthday is 24. Actually 24 is not... It seems like it was taken maybe several months ago because they're like, I think she's pregnant because there are no photos coming out of this party. And you know what? They were right. FBI, hire them because...
Truly.
Seriously, though. Several sources have told Page Six.
And TMZ now is confirming, too.
Oh, okay. Well, so then it's got to be
real.
True because they're a bunch of lawyers. That she is pregnant with baby number two, also by Travis Scott. So, happy for them.
Yay! Good for her, honestly. I think... Yeah. I mean, you know, she is 24. That's very young, but... I think Stormy's adorable and seems to be well cared for by, I'm sure, a team of nannies.
Right.
So, yeah.
Why not?
Happy for her.
Sure. Totally. We love a Kardashian baby. All right. Also in baby news that like maybe we're just like less fond of, but I just put on here because it was news. Colin Jost and Scarlett Johansson gave birth to a baby boy. He did not give birth. She gave birth to a baby boy. It happened. It's fine. He like posted on his Instagram story and was like, for any like inquiries, reach out to my child's publicist and like tagged Michael Che. And I was like, why would you willingly bring Michael Che into your baby announcement? Like, I just can't. So anyway, that happened. Congrats to them.
The baby's name is Cosmo.
Cosmo. Oh my God, I missed that.
Yeah. That's cute. I don't know. I feel extremely like I do not care about this child, but sure. You know, wish them the best.
Cosmo Jost. That is wow.
That is a little
like,
tough. Yeah.
That's like a teen bully name. That's like Back to the Future blonde bully on the playground.
As if this kid won't already get bullied enough for his parents.
Yes.
And you can't really nickname that name.
It's already a nickname. It's already like a. Yeah. Anyway, okay. In slightly happier celebrity relationship news, back in January, Dumois, I don't know that they had it first, but that's where I saw it first, reported that Zoe Kravitz, who days before had filed for divorce from Carl Gluzman, was dating Channing Tatum. And at first, you know, it was here and there on Twitter, but people weren't really buying into it. People were like, this can't be real. This is not like confirmed from anyone.
The only sites that had it was like HollywoodLife.com.
Right. And like it was here and there on Twitter. Like I remember looking and being like, are people talking about this? Is it real? And like really nobody was. Like every here and there people were like, Dumois has this, but I don't really believe it. Mm-hmm. However, this week on Wednesday in the East Village, Zoe Kravitz and Channing Tatum were spotted together going on a bike ride. She was like draped over his shoulders. He's got like this buzz cut.
She was riding on the pegs of his BMX bike. Let's be clear.
Right. Yes, you're right. Thank you for that image. They honestly look really good together. They both look like a little, like kind of grungy and just like
a little punk.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm into it. I'm actually, now that at first, you know, when the rumors first came out, I was like, I don't know. Like, it's, you know, she just got divorced.
And also Zoe Kravitz is like 10 times cooler than Channing Tatum.
Right. A lot cooler.
Wait, I disagree.
Really? But
I love Channing.
He was dating Jessie J at the time. It was like, I don't know about him. But as soon as I saw these pictures, and I think as soon as a lot of people saw these pictures, they were like, okay, I'm in. Like, this makes sense. The vibes match.
I like it.
Yeah, and I'm in on it as well. Why not?
They're both, like, unreasonably hot, so.
They are. It works. And in, like, kind of a similar, like, cool way. I think he's aged really well. I was just saying that. Yeah. Again, like, the haircut is not working great for him, but he still looks really good, I think. So, and she obviously looks amazing. So, I think it works. I like it.
Yeah.
And then in one more piece of sort of like out and about in New York relationship news, this girl, her taste in men, we have to talk about it.
Terrible.
Margaret Qualley, we've already talked about this year. First, she dated Pete Davidson. Then she dated Shia LaBeouf, which was like really controversial for a while. Broke up with him. Now she has been seen kissing Jack Antonoff on a bridge in Brooklyn on their way to get ice cream on Saturday. And I don't know. I think that she needs to expand her dating
type.
Profile.
Yeah. Her type is like very specifically like very mediocre white guy.
Right. Like men who don't own a loofah, you know, like I don't. There's something about like all these guys and like their little dad hats and like their kind of grungy vibes and their dark circles under their eyes. And I'm like, Margaret Qualley, like you can do better.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, of her recent relationships, like, I guess this is fine. He's 11 years older, but like she's 26. Mm. She's an adult, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure
they'll be broken up within like 4 months. So I'm not going to invest a lot in this emotionally.
And I am like, she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Lena Dunham, which is like kind of a weird vibe. but I don't know if they're close. I would imagine not, but like that's kind of a weird connection.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, weren't there like rumors about like Lord and Jack Antonoff? I mean, I think that would be even
more
it's just awkward.
Like I'm less concerned with her specific choice and more concerned with like the pattern of kind of men that she clearly is interested in.
Yeah.
So, you know, rooting for her, hoping her taste improves. But yeah, so that's like the, you know, today, this week in New York relationships.
And then speaking of Margaret Qualley's exes, Pete Davidson, and I wrote initially in the outline Phoebe Bridgerton. but her real name is Phoebe Denever. They broke up after 4 months together. No, not a huge shocker to anyone. But, you know, I don't know how Pete will find his next girlfriend because SNL is currently on hiatus. So.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Who is hosting next? Oh, I guess we'll have to wait for the host announcements to come
exactly.
out. And the after parties to begin again to find goodness. Out who he'll be with next.
Anyways.
I kind of liked them together. It was kind of like a...
Yeah, you know. They seem sweet, and he like went to the UK, and I think it's kind of difficult to get into the UK right now, so there must have been some dedication there.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll hook back up, you know, after all this is over.
Maybe.
I doubt it, but...
Okay, or not.
We'll see. We'll see.
Oh, goodness.
All right, Amelia, take it away.
Hard left turn.
I apologize in advance. There are two little confrontations that I want to talk about really briefly because this is relationship news. And I would say, you know, confrontations are relationship based, at least in this.
Yeah.
In these, the people
we
I'm
have
talk
some,
about.
You know, friends and ex-friends.
Right. Exactly. The first thing I want to talk about is Kevin Hart and Don Cheadle had a really great confrontation that has been all over social media because it was very funny. Don Cheadle was a guest on Kevin Hart's new Peacock show, Heart to Heart, and a clip from the interview has gone viral. And so they're casually having a conversation about, I think it was like generational wealth, and Don Cheadle mentions that he's 56. He just goes like, well, I'm 56, to which Kevin Hart replies with a damn, and he does it like that.
And Don, impression.
Thank you. Don Cheadle pauses and he stares at Kevin Hart, and Kevin Hart immediately apologizes and he says, I'm sorry. And then I've written out the following exchange. I've transcribed it for everyone on this podcast, which I mean, you can look it up. That's fine. You can skip through this, but I'll just give it to you right now. Kevin Hart, it was a thought and I blurted it out and I did not mean it that way. Don Cheadle, I'm fine. Kevin, I didn't mean it that way. Just understand, I didn't mean it the way it came out. Don, we'll take a poll on how you meant it with people here later after the show's over. Kevin, I can sit up here and honestly say, buddy, like, damn. Don, if we could play it back right now, these are two different dams. There was no like, wow, that was Kevin. I said, damn. Don, you said the word damn. Do you want me to tell you how I think you said it? Do you want me to say it back to you the way I think you said it? Kevin, go ahead. Don, damn. Kevin, I said, damn it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You shared this and I did not watch it because I knew my secondhand embarrassment couldn't handle it. That was, wow. That was damn. Wow.
It was.
Damn.
It was damn.
I really respect people who do like just kind of let people like sit in the awkwardness and like yeah. like if it were me, I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, whatever, like I know you, whatever, like I'll like, yeah, just no, harbor I'm, like a grudge for
I'm
you old, for the
I'm
rest.
Older That's than dirt, like it's fine, I'm a skeleton, it's fine, like yeah, I also would have done that. I respect him for kind of holding his feet to the fire. Yeah.
Right. I know. I love that. But anyway, people were praising Don Cheadle, saying, yeah, you tell Kevin Hart. But then Don Cheadle had to clarify on Twitter that the two are still friends and they were just jesting each other, which I think is actually really true. Because if you watch the entire clip of it, and the internet has only clipped a minute of this, but they kind of laugh about it and they jest each other. And Kevin jokes more about Don's age. And then Don mentions the gymnast Nadia Comaneci because Kevin can't pronounce her last name. And so and they're very jovial back and forth with each other. But of course, we only get to see a minute of it. So it's just like, you know, but it was fun. It was fun. It's a fun clip. So
you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. So look it up right now. I don't think my impression.
Your dramatic reinterpretation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you did a great job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I was transported.
Oh, well, thank you. Okay. Well, you know, no acting lessons here. But anyway, there was also another confrontation that I read about on Page Six.
A I'm really obsessed great, with this.
Yeah, really great article on Page Six. So Larry David, who I'm sure you know as the Curb Your Enthusiasm, he co-created Seinfeld. And then Alan Dershowitz, who is the infamous former Harvard Law professor who served as the appellate lawyer for O.J. Simpson and who has also been implicated in the Jeffrey Epstein case. So not really a great guy.
And is also a Trump supporter.
And is also a Trump supporter.
Oh, for three there.
Exactly. They had a confrontation at a convenience store in Martha's Vineyard, which is very hoity-toity. So in this article, page six article, according to this source who witnessed it, wrote it down before they forgot it and sent it over to page six, Larry screamed at Alan Dershowitz for his ties to the Trump administration. And the exchange was as follows. I'm sorry for this, but we're doing it again. Okay. Alan, we can still talk, Larry. Larry, no, no, we really can't. I saw you. I saw your arm around former Trump Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. It's disgusting. Alan, he's my former student. I greet all of my former students that way. I can't greet my former students. Larry, it's disgusting. Your whole enclave. It's disgusting. You're disgusting. And then this was also followed up by an added quote from the source. Quote, Larry walks away. Alan takes off his t-shirt to reveal another t-shirt underneath it that says, it's the Constitution, stupid. And then the source also, revealed that Dershowitz drove off in an old dirty Volvo.
That's an important detail.
It is an important detail.
On the ground reporting. I know. Incredible detail.
Like they said, they had to write it all down before they forgot it. And then page six went to Dershowitz and he confirmed that it happened.
Wow. And also why he was wearing two shirts, right? He was like going to give another shirt to a friend as a gift or something.
So, yeah.
This also follows up another really funny story about Larry David and Martha's Vineyard. Because you know how he got disinvited from Obama's birthday party?
Yeah. Did he?
He did. So he was on the initial guest list. And then he got a call from Obama's assistant. And he missed the call. And they didn't leave a voicemail. And he was like, oh, shit. They are going to ask me. They're calling to ask me to perform stand-up at Obama's birthday party. And I only have 3 days to repair. Like, this is terrible. Oh, my God. And he, like, gets himself really worked up. And so when he finally calls the assistant back, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm so sorry. Like, you can't come anymore. We're having to scale down the guest list. And Larry David was like, I was so relieved.
That is so Larry David. I love it.
That's like a Curb episode.
Literally.
It is. It really is. Oh my
gosh. That's great. Oh, Larry, what a guy.
What a guy. And then one final relationship note update. It's better for baby. So he had a birthday. He turned 49 last Sunday, but they didn't spend the day together. He spent it with his children, which I thought was very sweet.
Very sweet.
Then they were spotted on Tuesday kissing. So it's all good. We're all good. And then I also had in this doc that she bought some necklaces for his daughters, but it was actually, she picked up some necklaces from a gifting suite. But she was there with her daughter, Jennifer Lopez. Yeah. Well, but I'm just saying, like, of course it was like, you know, gifting. Like, right. I wish I could be gifted, like, you know, invite me to a gifting suite. She doesn't need it. I need it. No. But she was there and she picked up a necklace with her daughter and then they got two more for his daughters, which I thought was really sweet. It was really nice and thoughtful. Yeah. So really enjoyed reading that, you know?
Love it. Wow. What a hefty relationship news category.
Yes.
Amazing. All right. We got a little bit lighter load, but some heavy hitting news items. This is This Week in Not Worth the Tea and social media. On the social media front, I want to start it off with something that I think really sent a chill down the spine of like a certain age of millennial.
Millennials.
Yes. And that is the return of Yik Yak. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you clearly weren't in college from 2013 to 2017 or high school or any of the above. Yik Yak was an app that was launched in 2013, which was my senior year of high school / freshman year of college. And it was like an anonymous messaging app. So you basically like could create these discussion threads called yaks, and they only worked within a 5-mile radius. So like I could be in the library at Indiana University and open Yik Yak, and somebody could be like, wow, like there's someone making out, like whoever's making out and like aisle two, like stop it. We can see you. And then like everyone in the library would be able to see that, but like not see who sent it. And like it would only be the people in that 5-mile radius. So right. You know, there were some highlights, I would say, like as a student who used Yik Yak, like a lot of people used it to find parties. Like that was a big thing. But it also had a lot of downsides. There was a lot of cyberbullying. Like, there were no consequences. There was no fact checking. There was no like accountability for anything that was posted on there.
Yeah.
So it became this huge thing. I know you guys, one of you mentioned there was like a lot of reporting at your school on like hate speech.
I did a report on it. Like, it arrived. So I graduated college in 2012. I don't strike that from the record. but I did, my first job out of college was like reporting for a little newspaper. And it was in a town that had a couple of colleges. So it was a college town. And I had heard it and people were sending me like stories of like them getting bullied. Like, this mom sent me a story of her daughter getting like horribly bullied that she had to get pulled out of school about it. So I did a story on it. But at the same time, the daughter, like, she was caught calling people like pepperoni nipples. So I was like, you know what? You're kind of mean. So I'm not condoning the bullying, but I do think, you know,
maybe it does go both ways.
It does go both ways. Like, you know, look yourself in the mirror, you know?
Oh, Amelia. Wow. Investigative reporter Amelia. I love it.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yik Yak was like really big during my freshman year of college. And it was fun because it did like make you feel like, oh my God, like I'm in college. I'm in on all these jokes, like blah, blah, blah. But then it kind of just like fizzled out. Like, I don't remember. I tried to like go back and look at my old college newspaper and see if there was like some like harassment scandal, but I don't like think there was. I think people just got bored of it.
Yeah. So I was looking, and you know, I mean, now that it's coming back, there's been a lot of discourse about all the downsides that there were. And it did sort the apparently user downloads dropped 76% in 2016 compared to 2015. So like that was pretty much when it fizzled out. It shut down in 2017. And now that it's coming back and it's now available for download on the App Store for iPhones, there have just been a lot of stories about all of the issues and like how are they going to hold people accountable. So apparently they have the fact that this is a new policy is incredible, but they have a new policy where it's against the community guardrails to post bullying messages or use hate speech, make threats, or share anyone's private information. And if you do that, you will be banned from the community. Again, the fact that this was not part of the app earlier is an issue. So yeah, it just seems like we don't need another place to get people riled up.
Right, or harass people online.
Right.
It's not going to be good. It's not going to end well.
It seems bad. But it really, the nostalgia did come back for a second of being a college student. And
it really reminded me of like a very specific moment in time.
Yes, exactly. All right, Kaya, what do you got?
All right. So there was this big, long Page Six article this week that supposedly, quote unquote, influencers are, quote unquote, ruining the Met Gala. So the Met Gala is happening on September 18th. Usually it's the first Monday in May, but you know, there's this little thing called the COVID pandemic. Right. So the theme is America, a lexicon of fashion. The co-hosts are all under 25, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's Billie Eilish, Timmy, Naomi Osaka, and Amanda Gorman.
I love that he's just Timmy on this podcast.
I just wrote Timmy in my notes because I didn't want to figure out how to spell Chalobet.
The real ones know.
So it's just Timmy. And so basically there's this Page Six article and really they're just quoting like two people to base this like entire thesis off of it. They're quoting like one celebrity agent that was like, I've been told that a lot of influencers are on the guest list. I've heard Facebook and Instagram have taken so many tables, and that's put a lot of people off alongside the mask mandate, which, okay. And then a publicist with A-list clients added, personally, I don't think the Met is cool anymore. It's gone from super prestigious to being full of influencers. So there are reports basically that Addison Rae and Emma Chamberlain will be there. I'm sure many other influencers will be there. But as Taylor Lorenz pointed out, we love Taylor Lorenz on this podcast. She is an internet culture reporter for the New York Times. Go give her a follow. Influencers have been there for like years now.
Yeah.
Like James Charles attended in 2019 and got into that whole scandal about how like now there's finally influencer representation at the Met Gala.
Oh, right. Like,
what are you talking about? Yeah. And then like a YouTuber vlogged it in 2015. So it's like, this is nothing new, people.
It's always something too. You know, like it's, if it's not, you know, the models at Cannes, people are always like, oh, why are there models at Cannes? And then it's like, why are there influencers at Cannes? It's like, there are always going to be buzzy people that like, maybe you don't think are famous, but are famous in
and
other spheres.
And these people like, influence fashion, like whether you like it or not. Right. So they sell clothes, probably more so than most like magazines right now.
And they're going to be wearing something more interesting than like Karlie Kloss. So like, as long as they understand the assignment, I don't really care.
Yeah,
it's fine.
So yeah, Addison Rae will be there. Emma Chamberlain will be there. J-Lo will be there, but no Ben because he's filming a movie, which is so unfortunate. I would love to see the red carpet debut.
That
was great. Giselle and Tom Brady are not going. And then I think, yeah, just the usual people are going to be
That'll
there.
That'll be fun. We love a big Met Gala these days. Yeah. You know, we
and had the theme such song's a, fun.
Yeah, there was. It's been so long since we've had like our award shows and our fashion.
Brianna is there. I feel she will. I hope she is. I don't know. I feel I like she so will too. Be because she has like a lot of like stuff out right now to promote.
Yeah, she has been pretty active.
So
I
we'll
hope
see.
So. Fingers crossed. Fingers
Seriously.
Crossed.
Seriously, gosh, yeah, I'm excited. On that note, and speaking of influencers, OnlyFans recently said that they will begin to ban sexually explicit content starting in October, which means they'll still allow like nude photos, but pretty much everything else will not be allowed, which is kind of wild because I'm sure everyone knows what OnlyFans is. I don't mean to laugh, but it's just like it's very much like that. That's OnlyFans is for exactly.
Right. I saw a tweet that was like, this is like Subway banning sandwiches. Like this, that's what OnlyFans that's like. Perfect. I don't know.
Exactly. But it's also funny too, because only if you go to like their website or any of like their marketing things, they obviously for advertising purposes don't really promote that. They're like fitness people and chefs and whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's absolutely wild because not only does OnlyFans take a 20% cut from a creator's subscriptions, which is a pretty large cut, they're still having trouble finding funding from like big venture capitalists and whatnot, which is
dumb.
It's dumb. It's really dumb.
It's 2021 people. Like people like to like look at porn. Like it's fine.
Exactly. So, and I think this is all tied to they can't find advertisers. And it's really sad because I think this, especially with the rise of the pandemic and everything, had become a place for adult performers to really post their content and have agency over it and over themselves. And it's just like, well, I hope that there's another app that, you know, mimics what this app did, you know?
Right. And it also Tumblr banned porn.
Right.
Like in recent years as well.
And that's what pushed a lot of people to OnlyFans.
Right. And it hurt it. And also specifically, not only like sex workers, but also like, you know, queer sex workers and trans people and like people who don't have the space to do what they do elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so OnlyFans was like, I mean, they sort of made OnlyFans what it is. And then now they're being pushed out, which is just wild.
Yeah, and OnlyFans' whole message in the first place was like, oh, yeah, like, we're really, like, giving sex workers, like, a safe place and, like, letting them, like, own their content, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, now what then?
Exactly. Yeah. It's all hypocritical and just kind of sad to see this going away as a safe place for sex workers. So,
yeah.
Hopefully they will find the next best thing.
I hope so.
All right. Last thing that we're worked up about in Not Worth the Tea. Big week for TheRinger.com. Our very own Claire McNear, who literally wrote the book on Jeopardy.
she did.
She basically broke this big investigative report. You can read it on TheRinger.com. I highly recommend that you do. Mike Richards, who was tapped to be the new host of Jeopardy after weeks and weeks of guest auditions and hosts, which we've talked about at length. And basically her whole report is she went back and found episodes of his previous podcast, The Random Podcast.
And terrible name.
She is a national hero because she listened to all 41 episodes.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
A chore, I imagine. And she basically published this report about all the things that he said that were problematic or questionable.
Right.
Not just about, you know, people and minorities and women, but also about Jeopardy and just things that basically reflected who he is, who he seems to be, and why he's not suitable to be the host of this incredibly respected intellectual institution.
And the fact that he was in charge of the search for the new host of Jeopardy and picked himself.
Absolutely crazy.
So breaking news today is that it worked. And he's stepping down. It seemed to be the nail in the coffin on his run as host, his incredibly short-lived run as host. So great stuff from Claire. She's also going to be on the press box to talk about it. So you should read her piece, listen to her on the press box. And yeah, I'm very happy for my dad and his group chat of friends. He has him and his three friends from high school are all in a Jeopardy group chat where they like text each other to see who got the Daily Double, and like the
that
final Jeopardy.
Is so cute. That's
and sweet. He also has like been lending them her book that I got him for Christmas. And I'm just like really happy that now he gets to brag that like my coworker saved Jeopardy.
Wow.
You know, like that's that great. Is going to be a big deal for the Hallowell family. So thank you to Claire for saving Jeopardy. And yeah, you guys should definitely go read her incredible work because it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It is a very big deal.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All in one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
All right, let's move on to this week's cringe mode. We watched Summer Catch, which had its 20-year anniversary this year. It's out in 2001.
Yeah, I know you guys are all waiting for this anniversary.
This was a fun one. It was a fun summer movie.
I liked this. I had never heard of this movie before at
Me
all,
either.
So I really enjoyed it, though.
There you go.
We love a cringe meal out of left field, if you will.
Yeah.
Oh, good one. Good one.
Thank you so much. Okay, so this movie stars Freddie Prinze Jr., Jessica Biel. And Freddie Prinze is a guy, he lives in Cape Cod, and he just wants to play baseball. He's spent his whole life mowing the lawn of this like baseball field for the Cape Cod Summer League. And basically, like, he's getting his chance. He's sworn off drinking. He's sworn off girls. He's, like, buckling down. He's going to be, like, a star pitcher this year. And then fucking Jessica Biel exits a pool in slow motion, dripping wet. And he's like, damn.
That was also, did he swear off drinking because he drank, like, throughout the entire movie?
He said he was going to, and then he didn't. but, yeah, he was planning to buckle down, and then he didn't. But anyway, Tenley Parrish, played by Jessica Biel, you know, she's like the rich girl. She's on vacation. He mows her lawn. They have a summer fling. He tries to make it on this team. He ends up doing pretty well. He has like a final game. Tenley's going to leave for the summer to go work a job. He like pitches a no-hitter. She comes back and watches him. Then she leaves. Then he runs to the airport to catch her. And like they make out. She's like, I want to be with you. Did I miss anything huge? He's like competing with these other guys that like accidentally burn down the press box and like get kicked out. There's a lot of just like dude chaos. Among his teammates, some of it good, a lot of it bad, which we will discuss. And yeah, just like kind of a fun sports summer rom-com for the most part.
Yeah, it is.
Amelia, hit me with your first highlight.
I know that she is not the most popular person and I understand why, but I don't know. There's something about Jessica Biel that makes me root for her. And I think she is absolutely stunning. But
she's really pretty in this movie.
She's gorgeous. And it's funny to me because I feel like she gets like billed. And I think this happened in part due to being Mary Camden on Seventh Heaven for so long. But she gets billed as like this girl next door. And I'm like, oh, yeah, if you live next door to like a house of models. But she and there is something like every girl about her, and she's like athletic, which I love, and she just is really sweet and just charming in this movie. And I just like I don't see really anyone else fitting this role that was like as big back then, like a Jennifer Love Hewitt or a Michelle Williams or something. Like, I don't know. There's something about her in this role that just has me, you know, root for her. I'm like, yeah, you go take that job doing architecture.
I think her and Freddie Prinze Jr. have like really good chemistry too. Yes. So I think that's why it works really well.
Totally.
I'm glad that you mentioned that she's athletic because I wanted to say this and I wasn't sure how to work it in. She, in 2001, Jessica Biel and Jennifer Garner like had the absolute monopoly on like fucking jacked. Romantic leads. They are ripped. Like, it's not like her like, you know, like supermodel way. Like, they look like they could like bench press you. Mm-hmm. Jennifer
Kick
Garner.
Your ass.
Jennifer Garner this year was like in Alias, where she was like being a super spy, like had abs of steel, was also exiting a lot of pools in slow motion. Jessica Biel's shoulders and arms in this movie, I'm like, holy shit, like, what is your lifting routine? Like, and she honestly has been jacked her entire career. She's in that Blade
movie, which I love,
with Ryan Reynolds, where like they're like just absolute specimens. But anyway, we don't need to get into it. I just was like, wow, you are in incredible physical shape.
Amazing.
She looks great.
Yeah. This movie is such an incredible mashup of like a very specific type of aughts actor that you forgot existed until you saw this movie. And I could name them, but like you're not going to know any of their names. And you know?
And you won't know who they are until you see their face. And you're like, oh, that guy.
Right.
And like Matthew Lillard is probably the best example. But people do know him, but like him, like, you know, obviously Brittany Murphy, who we're going to talk about later, but like Mark Blucas, who was a Riley in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's like, he just was that, you know, Wilmer Valderrama also in
Wilmer
this.
Valderrama, yeah.
But like Corey Pearson, Christian Kane, these are all people, Gabriel Mann, these are all people that like you have no idea who they are, but then if you see them, you're like, oh, that guy.
Like, I know that guy,
And they're just like, their careers fizzled out like mid 2000s, but like they were in like 10 movies
they
between
were
2000 and 2004.
They were in for a while. They were
Totally.
Yeah. And like this movie just has all of them.
Yeah. This movie is like really, really extremely aughts. Like the soundtrack. I love the like villain guy in this movie. Like I feel like he's like very aughts villain with his like bleached hair that he always like styles differently. Yeah.
I was kind of into it. I won't lie. He had the leather pants. I was like, okay.
Oh, I know. I love that.
It's great. That is, very specific villain for sure.
Yes.
I also really enjoyed the like Cape Cod setting for this. Yes. Like, I felt like that was a really good setting for like a summer movie. Because it's like very small town. It's like very like, people just come there on vacation all the time. It's like got the beaches. I really liked it. I've never been to Cape Cod. Would love to go one day.
Yeah. I had this later on, but whatever the trope is of like, local guy who lives in a vacation spot visiting rich girl.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like The Notebook, you know, where like visiting rich girl is there. They have a summer fling. They're actually in love. They don't know if they can make it work. Like he lets out her wild side. Like it just works every time.
It's a formula that works, people.
Right. That's why we've been doing it so long. Exactly.
We never have to change it. We don't have to update it. It works every time. It works here. It works always.
Mm-hmm. Totally. On that note of doing what works, I will say I loved that there was this, the John, it's funny that you, and also it's like I recognize John C. McGinley, who is the guy from Scrubs, but I was like, who is that guy? Yeah. And I had to Google him and I was like, okay, it's the guy from Scrubs, but he is this, he's in every single, not him personally, but his character is in every single baseball movie. They always have a guy who looks like him. He's got like the suspenders that go up to his nipples.
Why is he pants like he's in the 30s? Like I don't get it.
Or he's like Larry King and he's got a little notepad and he is either a scout, which in this movie he is a scout, or a reporter who's like, gotta watch the baseball. But every single... Seriously, watch a baseball movie. Every single baseball movie has a guy that looks like him. He's got the slick back hair and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, I'm loving the consistency with this.
It's true. He is. He's everywhere.
He is everywhere. Also,
final highlight. The credits at the end of this movie are so early 2000s. They are on a Jumbotron. Yeah. So like, it'll be like, you know, Jessica Biel. And like her video is on a CGI Jumbotron. And then there are like fireworks in the background. And then it's like, Corey Pearson. And then like he comes up in his slow motion on the Jumbotron and his name's there and there are fireworks. It was really great. Really, really terrible. And I loved it.
Loved
so that was that was good. All right. Let's get into some lowlights. We like the first three of these are all the same thing, basically. And are the significant lowlight of this movie. Amelia, go for it.
I would say my first low light is goes to one person in particular. And honestly, I'm sure Matthew Lillard is a very nice person in real life, but he just sucks in this movie.
Yeah,
the character Billy Brubaker, not only is he a horrible best friend who doesn't even remember Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character's last name and how to pronounce it. He is also a quitter. He quits just because he had one bad game, which I'm like, well, then maybe if you're not even going to try, why
stick it out, man?
Exactly. He has rampant homophobia and fat phobia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is echoed throughout a lot of the conversations in this movie between the male characters. Kaya mentioned it starts like 15 minutes in the movie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't let up. And it like the whole thing.
It goes on for a significant amount of time. Like they make multiple fat phobic jokes that are just like, okay, that was pretty unnecessary for the like plot of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's part of it is like the whole locker room talk thing, which I hate in general because it's like this is just what guys talk about when they're together, which I'm like, okay, it doesn't have to be. And not all guys need to be assholes like this.
Right.
But there's this whole storyline where I'm going to call him Riley because that's his name in Buffy. The guy who plays Riley in Buffy is sleeping with this beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And she is plus sized and he has this whole storyline where like he's ashamed of being with her. His friends are making fun of him to a horrible, horrible degree. And then at the end of the movie, he gets up and is like, I like big women. And it's like, okay, she's stunning. You're a regular like 6'4" man in
None
a relationship.
Of this was necessary.
We don't need to justify any of this. This is a normal relationship between two people. Just like totally unnecessary. If we could cut every conversation about women out of this movie, it would be a lot better and a lot more enjoyable. It would also be a lot shorter, unfortunately.
It would.
It's always shocking to me. I mean, I know it shouldn't be because it's like I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh God, like people just talked like this like not too long ago, but I guess this was 20 years ago, but it's just like
it was really bad, really bad. My low light, which is much much more a trivial degree, but it really bugged me, there is so much sex on the ground in this movie. Is so many hookups that take place like in the baseball field, in a backyard, like near a pool, on the ground. I'm like, you're not high school kids. Like it's not like they're high school and like they live with their parents necessarily. And like they don't have access to a room of their own. Like they're in college. They're people trying out for like the minor leagues. Like you have access to a bed. Can we not locate a bed or a car? You know, like is the ground really our best option? Is a wet baseball field
really the best option here?
Also, like it's so exposed, like a baseball field, really? I don't know. I know that it's thematic, it's a baseball movie, but you know, it really bugs me to see that.
Totally.
Yeah, agreed.
Totally. I think also another thing about this film, and we've kind of talked about this already, but this film kind of forgets what happened like 15 minutes like prior, you know? Because one of the main cruxes of this movie is that it's the Cape Cod League. It's one of the best minor leagues. And it doesn't really make sense for Ryan to be like, I'm pitching this no-hitter game and there are scouts here, but now I'm leaving because actually I do not have any shot at becoming a major leaguer. And it's like, what?
How is there one guy on the team who's about to get signed to the Dodgers
for $2 million back in 2001?
And you're going to the minor leagues.
Exactly. And then also not only that, and then he leaves and has to, well, also he's not really a good teammate if, you know, he's going to leave them with having to pitch the rest of this game. But then it's like, oh wait, it turns out okay. Now he's like pitching for the Phillies against Ken Griffey Jr. Like, I just like, this film doesn't understand
what
happened.
There are some leaps of logic happening here.
A lot of leaps. Right. And then also on that note, why is he acting like he's never seen Tenley before when he said that he's mowed her lawn for 6 years. Someone forgot to read their own script.
Maybe she had like a major glow up or something is supposed to be implied.
Maybe. Sure. She left. She like bench pressed for a couple years, came back.
Yeah.
He was blinded by the shoulders.
I could see that.
It happens.
And along those lines, honestly, I'm kind of upset he didn't finish pitching his no hitter.
Right.
To go, like, how many times in your life, given that you seem to be like sort of a mediocre pitcher, are you going to have a chance to pitch another no-hitter? Like, in the very end, his very first pitch, he gives up a home run. So it's like, obviously, this isn't going well for you.
It's not replicable. Yeah. Very tough. I agree. You got to finish the game. All right. What has aged the best and the worst in this movie? Obviously, the rampant fat phobia and homophobia has aged the worst. Terribly. But beyond that, beyond that, what do we think?
I would say there's some Duncan SponCon going on in this movie. In the beginning, they're in the little locker room and there's like this huge Duncan donut, little a box of donuts. And, you know, it just it fits for because they're in Massachusetts, you know, I mean, it fits. It just fits. And I feel like Duncan is kind of having a renaissance, at least for the rest of the country.
It's true. Yeah.
I feel like we were like, what is Duncan? Like growing up, I was like, what is Duncan? So very on brand, great for them. Also, what I would say the worst, though, however, is the quote unquote cool tattoos that I totally forgot existed in the 90s and early aughts. It was a great era for just horrible, horrible tattoos. Yeah.
The barbed wire armbands.
That
really,
was bad.
Really bad.
And he also had a skull with baseball bat crossbones.
Oh, no, I didn't even see that one.
That was really bad.
Oh, God.
All right. I already talked about how the rich girl falls for local guy on vacation trope still slaps. So I had that as age the best. And then here's the worst. Why is every baseball movie about a pitcher? I'm so fucking tired of watching baseball movies about pitchers. And I get it. Like, they're in charge of the game. They're involved in every play. It's like, you know, very solo position. You can make or break it. Like, it's kind of glamorous.
Right.
You
know, dramatic.
It's dramatic. Like, I get it. But, like, give me a fun rom-com about, like, a first baseman. You know? Like, why?
Sure.
Where is, like, the shortstop representation?
Yeah.
Where is the left fielder representation?
Yeah. Where's the outfielder representation?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I feel like, you know, maybe a catcher. The catcher is also involved in a lot. Not, like, the sexiest of positions. A lot of, like, equipment. But, you know.
I think the problem with the catcher is that when they're playing, their face is hidden.
Right. That's true. So that's true.
Yeah, tougher movies. Okay, let's go back to first baseman then. You know, it's just like, I feel like there's potential to branch out here and I'm tired of pitchers. I'm just tired of it.
Yeah, agreed. For me, age the best, romantic swimming scene. Always,
yes.
Always.
Yes.
Yep, every time.
Every time. Don't change the formula. And yeah, worst, all of the fatphobic jokes.
Yep, yeah, definitely the major low light. All right, MVPs, Amelia.
There's a character, and I had to look him up because they only mention his name like a couple times. It's Augie Mulligan, who is one of Ryan's BFFs. And when Ryan is like, I'm quitting, I hate baseball. Augie is there and he gives this beautiful speech to Ryan where he essentially says, look, asshole, I have always been here. I will always continue to be here for you. And then Ryan is like, you know, I changed my mind. I do want to do baseball. So thank you, Augie. You saved the entire movie.
We love to see bros supporting bros. Yes.
Also, Augie, back to our aughts actor thing. Gabriel Mann of Josie and the Pussycats. So,
oh my God, that's where he's from.
Again,
okay, thank you.
It's these very specific actors who,
oh my gosh,
you just have not seen in anything since. Although he was in Revenge. You know, not much else. For MVPs, I'm going to take Freddie Prinze. Because, listen, it's just a solid romantic lead role for him. And he does a great job. He gives you what you want. He's fun. Yeah. He's charming. He's athletic.
Yeah.
He looks good. He has good chemistry with Jessica. And like, what more do you need? You know,
he got the job done.
Yeah.
I'll give my MVP to the little sister, Tenley's little sister. She was really cute. And I thought provided like some of the soul actually funny moments.
Yes.
Yes, I loved all her little costumes, and she knew a lot about baseball more than Tenley did. So
definitely good segue to the lightning round, because our first question is, I believe all of these written by Amelia. which of Katie's mascots did you like best for the Chatham team? Lobster, oyster, drunken fisherman named Barnacle Bob. I guess to explain, she tries out all these different mascots for this team, and they don't go over great with the audience. Even though she's adorable, and I don't know why they hate fun. So which one was her best? Amelia?
I would say the last one, the Barnacle Bob. Yeah. She really got into it, you know? She was doing
and
the
that
accents.
That one was a crowd pleaser.
It was. Also, Kate, she's a clam, not an oyster. Just
point
of clarity.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Okay,
sorry. I don't know the difference between those two things. That was my pick, was the clam. She had like a little...
It was cute.
She was really wearing the clam thing and her head was coming out the middle. I was like, how can you not like a child dressed as a clam? Come on, you're at a baseball game. It's so boring. All right, another great question by Amelia. Which of these late 90s, early 1000s songs would have saved this movie's lackluster soundtrack? And this is true because it's rare that we watch a movie from the 2000s and don't talk about how much we love the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's notable. Here are Amelia's suggestions. Crazy Town's Butterfly, Savage Garden's I Knew I Loved You, or Incubus's Stellar. Amelia, give me your reasoning here.
The reason for all three? Well, I was just...
any of them.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Well, I picked Crazy Town's Butterfly. I just feel like we could have had like a great
baseball training.
Thank you. With this song. And it would have been awesome. And just, I don't know, it would have fit really well, I think. And I think they tried with the soundtrack, but did
they? Maybe they didn't have the budget.
That, you know,
this seems like a pretty like low budget movie.
Agreed. Yeah,
that's fair. Kaya, what's your pick?
So I'm going to say the One Tree Hill theme song, which I did look up what the name of the song was, but then I promptly forgot it. But you know what I'm saying. Everyone knows. Like right as he's like being like, I quit. Like, I don't want to pitch anymore. I'm bad. And then the One Tree Hill theme song kicks in. Would have really like upped the drama.
That would have been great.
Absolutely. Let's talk about our favorite sort of cameo side character. We all agreed was
Brittany Murphy.
Our girl.
May no she rest in peace. Seriously. Have you guys ever watched the show King of the Hill?
No.
It's an animated series. So she plays one of the characters on King of the Hill and she does like such a great job. It's a really funny show. And I could hear flashes of her doing that and it's just like God, she was such an amazing actress that I don't think we really appreciated enough when she was alive.
No, she has this probably the most fun role in the movie. She's like the girl who like kind of sleeps around a little bit and like she you know is the one on the baseball field with Freddie Prinze in the beginning. But she's got this great accent also that she just really leans into. And I just love the commitment. She's so much fun to watch. And
I'm going to put Uptown Girls out there for cringe mode.
I love that idea.
That's a great idea. Wow. All right. Last lightning round. What's the best name in this movie? Some weird names.
Tenley. What a bold choice for the secondary main character to be named Tenley. And I love that.
Yeah. Only rival by Brittany Murphy's character is named Dee Dee.
Yes.
Which, it's pretty good, too. Yeah, but I think it has to go to Tenley.
Tenley. It's got to be Tenley. Just a baffling choice. All right. Let's wrap up cringe mode and get into our unanswerable questions. So all anyone's talked about in the TV world lately is White Lotus, which was on, I believe, HBO Max. I did not watch it. I will, I guess, one of these days. I know. I'm sorry. I've been busy. But the creator of White Lotus is Mike White, who you may know from many things. And my question is Mike White our greatest modern day Renaissance man?
Wow.
Because here are the things that you might know him from. First of all, I know him as Ned Schneebly from School of Rock. Iconic role.
Yeah. He also literally wrote School of Rock.
Amazing.
Genius.
Played Ned Schneebly. He has written and directed just all sorts of stuff. He is like a, you know, writer, director, et cetera. He, you know, wrote Enlightened, which people absolutely love on HBO Max as well. White Lotus has been a huge, huge hit. He also wrote and starred in Chuck and Buck as well. He worked on Dawson's Creek and Freaks and Geeks. So he also has this sort
most
of like
importantly
side catalog of reality television
amazing
fame. So I remember watching him on The Amazing Race on like when his season was live. He was on it with his dad. It was a long time ago when I was like watching it with my parents. And then he also, I know we have the Survivor heads on the pod. He competed on Survivor David versus Goliath in 2018. Took it incredibly seriously. Came in second, right?
And I arguably thought he should have won.
I think a lot of people, that is a common, based on my reading that I did for this question. And yeah, he made it all the way to day 39, one of the most popular seasons ever. And he has done a lot of interviews recently as he's been talking about White Lotus, which is like based on like On Vacation, about reality television. And he was like, I wish they would let me produce the show for a season.
Oh my God.
He has all of these ideas.
I would love that.
He's like, I would do home visits with the players so we could get to know them. I would do less advantages, challenges. Challenges that highlight survival skills and willpower, less puzzles and agility. He said, I don't know what any of this means. He said I would do a 50-day season, a 7-person jury, a final two.
Oh my God.
And then he goes, I would make them all as deranged with hunger and fatigue as possible.
Yes.
Honestly,
Mike White knows what we want.
Mm-hmm. I just like am amazed by just the range of interests and successes that this man has had. Ned Schneebly, who knew?
Amelia, have you seen White Lotus?
I haven't, but I've been meaning
really
to.
It's really good. Okay. Kate, I honestly don't know if you would enjoy it because there is a lot of secondhand embarrassment.
Okay,
like, a lot.
Thank you. Thank
like,
you
for
that. Scenes
where you literally need to watch like oh my through God. Your hands.
I'm so glad. So awkward. I'm so glad you warned me.
But it's really good. I think it's worth checking out. He also gave, Mike White gave an interview in Vulture this week that was really good and talked a lot about how like, you know, using Hawaii as escapism and how that can like create issues with colonialism. So if you've seen White Lotus, then check out the interview.
Yes. This is a great question because on it, if you think about it, like School of Rock is enduring. It is so fun. I could watch it today. And
it's one of the best movies ever.
It's so good.
It's just great.
It's so funny.
Really good.
It's honestly one of Jack Black's, if not his best movie. And also speaking on the Survivor beat, versus Goliath is truly one of the best seasons of Survivor. And I think he only lost because people knew how successful the guy was and they didn't want to give him.
I really
believe that.
And I can see that.
I think you're right. He is really the modern day Renaissance man.
He has such a range of skills. I just think it's incredible.
It is.
So yeah, that was my unanswerable question. If
that was
he,
a great one.
You know, branches out into other means of entertainment, like I will take note and I will keep you posted on the Mike White beat.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Amelia.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to change. I mean, it's all in the same tone, I guess. But okay, I'm going to ask a question and you're going to have to listen to me. So you're going to have to indulge me for the next few minutes because it is, this is kind of like a mystery beat, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So the popular YouTuber Wang, there's an exclamation point after it, recently posted a video trying to solve the mystery of Celebrity 6. And I've actually been following this story for a while now because it appeared on the gossip website that I love called Oh No They Didn't months ago. But it actually originated on Reddit where user Tansa H posted in the Tip of My Tongue subreddit asking for help identifying a picture of curtains they owned. And this mystery has become so popular that it now has its own subreddit. So it's all over the internet.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. The curtains pattern is this interesting image of celebrities from the 2000s. And Reddit has been able to identify each celebrity with an accompanying photograph from the image which it was taken. Except for one of the celebrities, which is celebrity number 6. Okay, here are the identified celebrities. Celebrity 1 is Adriana Lima, who is obviously a very famous Victoria's Secret model. Celebrity 2 is Josh Holloway, who I think is best known for being on Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrity 3 is Adriana Lima again.
Celebrity,
Celebrity 4 is Jessica Alba. Celebrity 5 is Travis Fimmel, who was a very popular model back then, but I guess now
is he on Vikings?
Yes, he is now most known for Vikings. Celebrity 7 is Ian Somerhalder from Vampire Diaries. And Celebrity 8 is Orlando Bloom, which means we don't know who Celebrity 6 is.
No, this is literally the most random grouping of celebrities ever.
So weird. But
it's like a Who Weekly lineup.
Like why Adriana Lima twice?
Twice? Too? It's so strange. I don't get it, but people have been trying to guess number 6 for a long time. Celebrity 6 could pass for either a woman or a man. They have angular features and they have hair that touches their shoulders and looks as if it's been pulled back on the top. What we know about them is that the fabric, or what we know about the fabric itself, is that it was purchased around 2008 or 2010. Each photo was taken from 1999 all the way up to 2000. And according to Wang, most of the images are from Getty and most are also from media events. And popular guesses of Celebrity 6 include Evangeline Lilly and another photo of Travis Fimmel. Yeah,
it's gotta be a woman. Looking at it, I think so? Clearly a woman.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because people
I think Evangeline Lilly's a good guess.
Yeah, but they can't, because every other photo they've been able
to find
the original one that it was based on, but they cannot find this person. And people have been going to the company from which the fabric was sold, and they're like, we don't know, / we can't disclose for legal reasons. I guess the Library of Congress is now getting involved because, Reddit user Codell76 runs the Library of Congress mystery photo contest, and they said they would pass it along to people. But it's a mystery. We don't know who Celebrity 6 is, but it's also a fun mystery because no one is murdered, you know?
Yes, it's very low stakes.
Low stakes indeed, yeah.
This is going to drive me crazy.
To me, the first person who popped into my head when I saw the picture was Cody Horn, who was in Magic Mike.
That's a good one. Oh, my God.
That is a good one. That does look like her.
You know what? I wonder if anyone's guessed that. That's really good.
That's so random, though. Although I guess all of these celebrities are incredibly really random.
I feel like with this kind of thing, you really just have to like go with your instant reaction to the photo of like, oh, that's
right.
Like if you think about it too much, but...
Right. Totally. She does have like the strong jawline. Yeah. Like Cody Horn does. Wow. We're going to have to check back in when this mystery is solved because I have to know.
I know. Yeah. Same.
All right. Kyle, let's wrap it up.
Wrapping it up with the news of the weekend. Mm. Any guesses for the name of Kylie Baby number two?
Okay. Can I share with you guys my story? Have I told you about the girl that I went to school with who guessed celebrity baby names?
No.
Okay. So I dug up, I found the article from my college newspaper about this girl. Okay. From December 14th, 2015, the Indiana Daily Student. I'm looking at the article right now and it's about Beth Delaney. Okay. And it's called IU Student Predicts Celebrity Baby Names. She had an article written about her in our school newspaper because she had predicted Saint. That was the correct name that she predicted ahead of time. And that's not the only baby name that she had predicted. Okay. I just checked it on her Twitter. She has not predicted this one yet, but I'm going to let you know if she does. Okay. So she correctly predicted Saint West. She also won a contest because she correctly predicted two parts of the name of Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck's second daughter, Serafina Rose Elizabeth. Since then, I'm quoting from the article now, which was written by Jack Evans. Since then, she has also correctly guessed the names of Jessica Alba's second daughters, Haven Warren and Liam Schreiber, and Naomi Watts' second son, Samuel Kai Schreiber.
Oh my God.
So like, what a talent. This was like her thing. And I remember I was in a class with her when this came out and I was like, how does this girl do this? she did not correctly predict Lux, which was Kim and Kanye's she did predict Lux. She couldn't predict North because she does better when they've already had a child.
Who is Lux?
Who's Lux?
Oh, no. She guessed Lux for North. Sorry. That's what it was.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a second.
I was like, there is no Lux.
I'm reading a tiny PDF of this article from 2015. So
good.
Our archives are not great. That was her guess for Lux. And she said that it's easier for her to predict names when they've already had a child so that she can base her guests on like their previous thing. So anyway, when you guess this, I like would totally flashback to this girl. And I was like,
have a process? Like, is it luck? Like, how does she do this?
I don't know. I don't know that she even has, it doesn't say in this article that she has some sort of strategy. I guess she just like knows a lot of celebrity baby names and like just pays attention to trends. Anyway, this is all to say I don't have a guess for the name of Kylie's second baby, but I feel like I know someone who might, and I will let you know if I get a prediction from her. Maybe I'll DM her on Twitter.
What are you guys thinking? Weird specific talent to have.
Yes, incredibly.
I'm thinking, well, okay, so first baby name is Stormy. I feel like Kardashians really love like a theme, you know, for children's name.
Yeah.
So it's probably could it like be something weather related?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cloudy.
Let me
look. I'm Googling weather names right now. Okay.
Sunny.
Sunny flurry.
Flurry.
That would be tough. Stormy and flurry would be actually that's kind of cute.
That is kind of cute.
I think Lux actually could be a good name for
that. That sounds like a name.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like one. I mean, maybe they'll go like something like Zephyr or like, you know, like one of those. I do think like the nature theme is a good starting point.
Tree.
That's already taken by Taylor Swift's publicist. She has a monopoly.
Oh, yeah.
A monopoly.
Sage. Sage. Okay. I feel like that's too normal.
The cottage core names are in, you know? We were talking about how like Willow and all of those are in.
That's true.
I guess we'll see. Who knows? We'll have to ask Liz too if she has a prediction.
I'm sure she does.
All right. On that note, thank you guys for listening. Thank you to our producer, Kaya McMullen, for pulling double duty this week.
It's a pleasure.
Filling in for long lost Elizabeth. This has been another episode of Tea Time. I'm Kate Hallowell.
I'm Kaya McMullen.
And I'm Amelia Wedmeyer.